Hi, I'm Angela, and welcome to the Mood Board Podcast. I want to thank everyone who has been listening, has been supporting this podcast. I am still in shock that this podcast was picked recently to be featured on Anchor's blog for How I Podcast. I'm just so excited that people are listening and it's resonating with you guys. And so I'm saying all that to say I'm running a rerun episode today. And that's because we are working on a brand new series all about how to renovate the home. I am working on an exclusive home tour with Better Homes and Gardens for 2022. And I am going to be having some awesome interviews with tastemakers from all over talking about their renovation stories, some of the nightmares, the horrors, also the good, the beautiful stuff as well, and just kind of getting into how are they doing all of it right now. Anyone who's purchased a new home right now, who's had to relocate anywhere, has known that renovations this year and last year, it's not business as usual. There are delays. There are so many different things within the delivery process with companies that are backordered, that are delayed, that just aren't ever coming. And we've all had to pivot and come up with new ways and even just decide like what's worth renovating, what's our priority list, and what can wait until next year. So I'm really excited to kind of dig into those conversations. One of the things though that I did want to do today that I thought was just a good interview, just to give us some laughter, and reminding you, no matter where you are right now with your resume, you can always change and reinvent yourself. So I thought this was great. I had done this interview last year with Mikkel Welch. He was actually one of the first people I actually did an interview with, and he is an interior designer, celebrity interior designer. He's been on several shows, just really has a great style, has a new home collection, and it's just been killing it recently. But I think if you listen to where Mikkel started and where he is today, many of you may be shocked. Many people have been asking me, how can they support my business? And let me tell you, if you're listening to this podcast, you are already on the right path. So just make sure that you subscribe and share it with your friends and family. But a second thing you can do is sign up for my Skillshare class, The Art of Styling Your Room, How to Create a Mood Board. In less than 15 minutes, you will have all the tools you need to begin to design your dream space. I will also provide feedback on Skillshare and share students' work on my Instagram feed. So on that note, let's get started with the show. Hi, Mikkel. How are you doing?
Good. We got it.
Oh, Lord. It's like with technology. It's like when it's good, but when it's bad, I'm like, so it just told me these two steps. And I just say that over and over again until it works.
It's all right. We got it together. So. How are you today?
I'm all right. Happy Valentine's Day.
Yes, happy Valentine's Day.
I'm like, all right. So I guess one of the first things I want to know just before I even dig into questions is just, like I said, I went to your blog and I read that great story, you know, about your first job. But I'm really curious to know, you know, how did you get into interior design? How did that all come together?
Sure. I'm glad you're taping it because I'm long-winded with this type of stuff.
Okay.
So I'll tell you the full story. Okay. Oh, to ask, is this part edited or is it like, what's the format of?
This is a good question. So like usually like this little banter, sometimes I'll have that edited out. Sometimes I'll keep it in. But for the most part, once we start getting into the questions, I just go all the way and rarely edit.
Okay, got it. But the format will actually be like a voice interview as opposed to written.
Exactly. So it'll be a podcast. There'll be an audio intro. There'll be an outro, and then there'll be a link because it's basically going to go everywhere. It's going to be in Apple iTunes and all that stuff.
Okay, that's excellent to know. So I know how far to go with the things I'm saying.
Yes. I agree. How big is the audience? Quite large. Yes.
All right. Perfect. All right. All right, so Mikkel's start. I kind of had a very interesting route into interior design. I'm one of those self-taught interior designers.
Yeah.
So my journey has definitely been different. So after I graduated from Morehouse College in Atlanta, and I just kind of found myself like stuck, right? It's like you have this degree.
Yeah.
And you went to school because your parents told you to go. And it's like, okay, well, now what do you want to do with your life?
Yeah.
And so I wish people like Gary Vee were around back then, because like I needed inspiration. Actually, no, he probably would encourage me so much not to go to school. But
that might have been too much encouragement.
Right, too much encouragement. I didn't need Gary Vee. Thank God he wasn't back then. But no, I love Gary Vee. I was really frustrated, and I found myself like in a bunch of dead end jobs, from like probation officer to ended up working in retail. And so I just got frustrated. And my mom told me, she said, you know, you need to find your passion, and you'll know what it is, because it'll be something that you'd be willing to do for free. And, you know, like at 21, you're like, what? The only thing I want to do is like get a job so I can pay these bills.
Yes.
And I don't do anything for free. But anyhow, I'm like, oh, you know what? I like clothes. I'm going to go work at Bloomingdale's.
Yes.
So I went to Bloomingdale's, hated the job. But one day on my lunch break, I remember I looked up at the clock, and I had spent like 40 of my 45-minute break in Crate and Barrel. And I'm like, oh, shoot. Like, I don't even have 5 minutes to get to the food court. I need to go clock back in. And it was like this Oprah aha moment. Like, literally, it was like a scene out of a movie. I started thinking about, like, why are you in this store for 45 minutes? You don't have any money. You're making $10 an hour. And I'm like, okay, wait a minute. I have all these stacks of design magazines on the floor. I have all of these accessories that I had purchased from like Home Goods that are just sitting in the closet, and I don't have clients. They're just for me. And so it was one of those things where it's just like all the pieces started being put together. And so from there, I ended up going to work for a furniture store called Storehouse Furniture in Atlanta.
Okay.
And while I was there, I ended up working in their logistics office. And so I was in charge of like sending the products for, like, let's say, like, I think Oprah had just done Hurricane Katrina relief. And she sent like all of this like free merchandise, like, you get a free house, you get a new free house. So everybody got a whole house. And I think Nate Berkus designed them all. And I was in charge of sending the product. And I'm like, well, I don't want to just send the product. Like, that's no fun. I'd rather be like at the house making the room.
Yeah.
So it was just like, how do I get on that side? So after several failed attempts to become a buyer, because I'm like, oh, if I become a buyer, I can choose the furniture. I was just like, maybe I should just go elsewhere. So I ended up going on Craigslist. And this is like 2007, scary Craigslist. So like before Craigslist was like a legit source.
Right.
And so it was real sketchy. I think they had it like three cities at this point. And so I went online. There was a gentleman looking for a design assistant. And I'm like, you know what? I think I got the chops to do it. So apply for the job. Most random thing ever. I was supposed to meet him at 6 o'clock in the afternoon. We didn't meet until 10 o'clock at night, because and I get it now as an interior designer.
Yep.
Happened. But but you know, funny story in that I made my best friend, we drove past the location, and I made him wait outside, because I'm like, just in case this man like tries to chop me up or something.
Like, it's true, like it's a 10 a.m. meeting.
Yeah. Yes.
So this is,
yes. This is 10 o'clock at night. I shouldn't be having an interview at 10 o'clock at night, but it was the best thing I could have done. He had a fabulous house when I went inside, and I ended up being his design assistant, and I worked for him for a year. And I really just learned the art of how to run a design business. Like, how do you, you know, run a consultation? Like, how do you project manage? Because it was just the two of us. So I was like his everything.
Yep.
So I just learned, I mean, I could do everything from paint to hang drapery. I mean, I could do it all, because I had to do it all. But after that, I was just kind of like, after a year, I'm like, you know what? I don't so much love his design aesthetic, but I appreciate what he taught me.
Yeah.
And I was ready to venture out on my own. And so I went on Craigslist, and I put an ad out, and I basically said, you know, I will design one free room as long as the clients pay for the furniture. And
what?
that's how I built my portfolio for a full year. So I'm crazy. So like I did that for a year and things started to pick up.
Yeah.
I had a friend who was a photographer, so he would take like, you know, photos of my work. And so I'm like, you know what? I really want to move to New York or Miami, LA. I want offices in all these like fabulous places. And so I went back on Craigslist. I'm going to write a book called Craigslist.
You really are. I'm like, I'm yes. loving these connections yes. from
Craigslist. Is my everything. So I went on Craigslist and I put an ad out, same one, the free design, but I did it in New York, Miami, LA. And I said, wherever I get the most hits, that's where I'm going to move to. And obviously, because New Yorkers are like crazy and cheap,
yeah.
I got like 20 emails like in an hour. But one of them was substantial. It was for WebMD. WebMD was this new, they weren't even a thing yet. Because again, this is 2007. So WebMD was this weird new thing where they were like trying to, you know, give you medical tips and, you know, increase your anxiety because you look up things on the internet and you think you have like all types of diseases. But anyhow, they were brand new and they were looking for someone to design a rooftop event. What? And yeah,
this story is crazy.
It is crazy. And but the funny thing is I have highs and lows though. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm acting like I live there, first of all, because I don't live there. And so I'm like literally faking it. And they're like, oh, okay, well, can you come in tomorrow to the office? And I'm like, ooh, I'm in Atlanta. Like,
yeah,
that ain't gonna happen. So I'm like, I can get there Monday. But it didn't pan out. And but what that was a wake-up call to me. It was just like, you know what? You need to go to New York. So I ended up taking a job at the Container Store. I'm like, before I go, at least get some type of retail job. So I applied for a job at the Container Store. Got that interview. And I said, okay, I'm moving. It's retail. I'll get it. So I got the job. While I'm on the job, I ended up running into one of my coworkers who became my mentor, Jillian Browder. And Jillian used to, at that time, she was kind of like a ghost designer.
Okay.
And she would do the, like say for instance, like we work with a really high-end designer who did designer show houses where we would go, she would design it on paper and we would just kind of come in and implement it.
Yeah.
So we were just like totally ghost designers. And then we did prop styling, photo shoots. And so she just really taught me the world of like high-end design. Mm. And that was different for me because, you know, I'm used to like West Elm budgets.
Yeah.
I had never, you know, gone into a merchandise mart before. And so it was just completely different. So, you know, and we laugh at that now because she's like, oh, one day you're going to do your own show house. And I'm like, no, I'm not. This is expensive. But
but right,
as I'm on my fifth one now, which is so funny, like this is so crazy. So, yeah, so that's kind of how I started. Then from that, I will say I got a little cocky. So I
you're feeling yourself.
Yeah.
Now you're doing some stuff and you're in New York.
Yes, I'm feeling my little oats and I'm like, okay, I'm leaving this Container Store. And and so I Craigslist again. You know, I'm still doing the Craigslist ads.
You're throwing a lot on
Yes, because you know, because my whole thing was I will work for someone else, but at the same time I still need to build Mikhail Welch designs because so you know, I'm still working with her, but I'm still the end goal is to beef up my portfolio. I get a call and it was from some Hasidic Jewish developers. And this is like when Williamsburg was starting to blow up. This is like 2010 now. And so they hired me to do model home staging. So I was beginning to do model home staging and I'm really feeling myself. So I quit my little job and now I'm only working with my Hasidic Jew friends. And so it was so random. The one black gay man with the Hasidic Jews. But
it all worked. It all worked out.
It worked. Those checks cashed at the bank and it worked. So one day I got a call saying that they were gonna, you know, no longer need my services. And what it was, I had gotten fired. And the reason I had gotten fired is because I used this red, white, and black color scheme, and they said it looked like the Palestinian flag, and they were offended. It was a big cultural note for me to learn, but it was hard. You know, I was very depressed for that month because that was like my big contract, and you know, now I didn't have anything, and so I had to like tuck my head between my head and, you know, tuck my head between my legs and, you know, kind of go back to retail and end up working CB2 furniture. And I did that for 2 years. And while I was at CB2, I will never forget, I was up at the cash register and this guy comes in and he has like six assistants and they're grabbing pillows, vases, like you're grabbing everything. It looks like supermarket sweets. And I was like, whoa, hold on. I was like, I'm taking this one. I'm like, what do you do? And he's like, I'm a set designer for the show Dexter on Showtime.
Oh, shut up.
Right. And I said, okay, well, you need to help me get from this side of this register so I can like do what you do.
Yeah. And
so the guy was like, well, you know what? If he's like, you know, we're just taping one episode here, but we live in LA. If you ever come to LA, I'll let you work on the show. So my crazy self, of course, I go to my manager. I'm like, well, I just got offered a job in LA. So I'm going to need you to transfer me to at the LA store. So she transferred me a month later. I packed up my stuff. I didn't really have the money to get there. My coworker bought my ticket. I ended up staying with a friend. And they were empty nesters. They let me use their car. So, of course, I'm blowing this man's phone up 2 weeks before I get there. He does not pick up. Of course, it's fine.
It's LA.
It's fine. But when I get to the job, I was just like, you know what? God has me here for a reason. Yeah. And I'm going to make it work. So I said, anyone who comes into this store who looks like they're shopping for someone other than themselves, I'm going to do the same thing. Yeah. And LA was a different beast because they had people like that coming in every 3 seconds. So I was like, okay, I know me. I can hustle. I can make it work. So within the first week, I got an internship with Teen Vogue magazine and HGTV. And my very first job was working with Emily Henderson, had just won Design Star.
Yeah.
Her assistant came in. Actually, he has a new show out, Orlando Soria.
I was like, yeah, I worked with Orlando before.
So Orlando came into CB2. I harassed him, and he took my my card, and I emailed him. He set up the interview. And I worked with them for, that was about a month and a half. And it was the most random job because, like, I had to ride around with one of the art, he wasn't like the art director, but we, like, had to basically unload Emily's storage unit. And, like, he was trying to show me Boy Scout knots. And I was just like, oh, Jesus. but that was my job. I had to do it. But I learned so much. From him and from Emily in the short amount of time that I worked with her. She had just won Design Star, and this was the, they were taking the second season of her show. And so, Secrets of a Stylist. And so, while I was doing this, I wasn't getting paid because it was a free internship that I volunteered for. And that's one thing. Can I just say something about that? Because that's one thing I really love to tell millennials specifically. Because I know everybody's so money hungry, but the biggest opportunities that I've ever had have come from the free opportunities. And I say that because people are so willing and apt to give you an opportunity to test things out for free. Yeah, you do, because nobody wants to pay for your mistakes. And you're going to make some mistakes. You know, if you can get yourself in the door, Then you can make some money.
Well, on that note, let's take a break. When it comes to finishing a room, most people forget about the styling. Even when people buy the whole room setting from the showroom, You guys remember that? Showrooms? Ugh, those were the good old days. You'd often come home, set it all up, and then ask yourself, why doesn't it look as good as it did in the store? Well, the secret is because it hasn't been styled. But don't worry, I've got you covered. Check out my Skillshare class, The Art of Styling Your Room, How to Create a Mood Board. And in less than 15 minutes, you will have all the tools you need to begin to design your dream space. Sign up for Skillshare.com, and I will post your work on my Instagram feed.
So yeah, so I worked with him for about a month and a half. And at the same time, obviously, because I'm working the retail job, I'm still trying to make some money, I was applying for other positions, and I got a call back from the Style Network, was what it was called at the time. And they were looking for a set decorator for the show Jerseylicious. And so, Right. So I applied for this job, and they are like, okay, can you come in for an interview in 3 days? Well, I'm in LA, and the job is in New York. So I called that coworker back. I'm like, girl, I need you to buy me another flight. So she's like, what a minute, you haven't been there 90 days. I'm like, look, just buy the flight. Like, I'm gonna get the job. So she flew me back, got the job, didn't know what I was doing. But I was like, I can figure it out. I had worked on the set, and that's what Emily's job gave me. I knew now what it was like to work on the set, how to shop, etc. And so I did that show for a year. And after I got finished working as a set decorator on the show, my coworker, you're gonna laugh, comes up to me. He's like, hey, Mikhail, I saw this thing on Craigslist, and it's called Design Star, and they're yes. And I was like, I know that show. I was like, I watch it all the time. And he was like, well, you should audition. And I was like, okay, well, I didn't know they had auditions. And so I put my little portfolio together, not realizing, you know, that all those little free jobs. So now I've got Teen Vogue, HGTV, and now the Style Network. And so when I'm printing, and I hadn't even printed out a resume, but when I started looking at the body of work that I had collected just off of these quote-unquote free projects, it was crazy. And so when I marched in to the interview, it's like over audition, it's like 2,000 people lined up on the street, and they chose two of us. Out of that 2,000, me and Danielle Colding, they chose the two of us. And
you and Danielle, shut up.
Yes. Yes, we were in the same season. That was one of my good friends on that show. I still talk to her. But yeah, they chose us. And the thing that they said they liked about me, I was kind of cocky too, because she asked me, she was like, out of all the people in this line, you know, you don't have a design degree, like, why should we choose you? And I was like, because based upon my portfolio, I guarantee you nobody has the breadth of work that I have. None of them have done this stuff. And so they flipped through and they were like, okay, can you come back? And I'm like, really? So a couple of auditions later, I ended up getting cast for the show. Prior to going on the show, I flew back to LA and I took some hosting classes so I could just learn like how to do it, like how to speak in front of the camera and deliver a message, etc. So I did that. After the show, I came in fourth place, which wasn't too bad. I'll take it.
I mean, come on, you were on the show. It's crazy.
I know, right? So I'll take it. That was like that. It was kind of scary because up until that point, that was always like a dream of mine to get on that show. And then after you get on it, you're like, well, what do you do now? Like, you achieved that. So, and that's a scary feeling. So, after I came off of the show, I went back to work for Jerseylicious for about another month or so. And my boss dropped the bomb on me and said, you know, we're going to go to Chicago. And she's like, I want you to come with me. And we're going to work on the Steve Harvey show. And so I'm like, okay. All I know about Steve Harvey is him and his suits. And I know they're really long and big. And I was like, and I, in my little bougie head, I was like, I do not want to work for this man in these suits. And so up until like, and I didn't want to leave New York to go to Chicago because for me that was like going from Coca-Cola to Diet Coke, and I was just like, I just can't do it. I know what the real thing tastes like.
Yeah.
But Chicago ended up being the best thing that could have ever happened to me. So my first day on the job with Steve Harvey's show, I'm sitting in a meeting with all of the executives and producers. There are about 60 of us in the room. And mid-meeting, and it's Black History Month, so let me just give you a Black History Month fact about that.
All right, so share some history.
Yes, share some history. In this said meeting, there are only about, let's say, 10 brown people, maybe. Mm-hmm.
That's a high number.
Yeah, that was an extremely high number. But most people would think, you know, being it's like the Steve Harvey show, that it's just, you know, going to be a blackout.
Right, right.
Like, that's not how the corporate world mm-hmm. works. It just doesn't work like that. So there were 10 out of about 60 of us, 60 people there, maybe 10 black people. And I'll never forget Steve Harvey's manager looks over at me, and I love that man to this day. He said, in the middle of the meeting, I know who you are. And I'm like, oh, shoot. And he's pointing at me. He's like, you're that guy who put that ugly green paint on the wall on HGTV, and they sent you home. And I'm like, thank you, black man. Thank you. Thank you for making this announcement on day one of work.
Yes. Set up for success now. Thanks.
Yes, exactly. So everybody's looking at me crazy. And so he said, when we finish this meeting, I want you to talk. I want you to have a conversation with me. Mm-hmm. And because this is a family-friendly podcast, I edited out some words because he said a few other explicit things that I can't say on the radio. But but when we got finished with the meeting, he says to me, I want you to come meet Steve Harvey. His office was painted yellow. He hates it, and I know you can fix it. But before we go in this room and I introduce you to him, because I hadn't met him yet, he's like, don't paint it green. And I was just like, okay. And so I go in to meet Steve Harvey, and, you know, he's there. I think he was like, I don't know. He had like a bunch of people who were asking questions. And so we sit down, and he's like, hey, young man, they told me you're a great designer. I'm going to take Family Feud this week coming up. Can you make my room look masculine and smoky? I said, I can do that. And I said, well, you know, let me ask you a few more. He said, no. Don't ask me anything else. He said, listen, I respect you as a designer. He said, I wouldn't ask you to tell me anything about jokes, so I'm not going to tell you anything about design. He said, you know what? I'm going off of what they told me. They told you you can design, so just do whatever you think. Yep. Just make it look good. Yep. And I appreciated that. Like, he was just like, I love Steve Harvey. He's one of those, I'm not going to step on your toes, just do what you do. And so a week later, I meet him at the office, and he tapes his radio show at the office as well as the TV station. So this man is at this office from 5 a.m. until 9 p.m. at night. So he's there all day. And so so it's kind of like his house, basically, because he's there, you know, 5 days a week like that. So get back to the office at 5 o'clock in the morning to show him his office. Keeping in mind, I still got to be to work at 9 o'clock at that studio. They don't care that I'm designing his office. They just want me back to my desk.
Yeah.
So I get there at 5 o'clock in the morning. He asks everyone to wait outside. It's just the two of us. And he's just like, so he looks around and he like gave me a hug. And I'm like, what is this embrace for? Mm. He was like, I just can't believe that you were able to create something like this. And he was like, and I didn't tell you anything.
Yeah.
But he was just like, you just captured what I needed. And in that moment, it was big for me because I was just like, in my own little arrogant head, I was so, you know, pompous in my thought process that I didn't want to work for this man, not knowing that God had a blessing in that for me. And so I got ready to walk out of the room and something came over me and I got turned around and I looked at him. I said, you know what? God is telling me to tell you I don't want to work for you. And he was like, what did you just say? And I was thinking the same thing, because I promise that was not me speaking in that moment. Like, I don't even know where that courage came from. It was God. It was not me. I don't know where that one came from. But when I said it, it was me. So I was like, okay, you got to clean this up. And so I said, you know, honestly, I'm not enamored by who you are. I said, you know, I want my own television. He said, what do you want? I said, I want my own television show.
Oh, all right.
And so he just looked at me. He just stared. And he said, you know, nobody has ever had the courage to talk to me in the manner in which you just did. And he said, because you did, I can't give you a show because mine ain't even taped one day yet. He said, but I'll put you on my show. And it was a platform. And so I was now the, like, Nate Berkus of the Steve Harvey show. I would make over homes on the show for a lucky viewer 5 to 6 times per year. And from there, I was just like, okay, well, what do you do with this? So I hired a publicist. And I was going, oh, it was looking good on, I mean, I was in all types of magazines, People magazine, Ebony magazine. I could barely even eat. I was on ramen noodles because I was so passionate about putting the money back into my business. And so from there, that's when things started to pick up. I got my call to do my first designer show house. When I did that first show house, that opened my world up because it gave me my first six-figure client.
Wow.
And so, you know, that was 2014, 15. So, I mean, what was that? But that was 5 years ago. So, it really hasn't been like a suit. I mean, it's a long story.
But I love the story. Like, it's such a great story. I'm like, okay, so we went on the Mikkel, you know, book. When's the book coming out?
Oh, that one's coming too. That's coming very, very soon.
I feel it. Yeah. I'm like, I already know that's happening. Like, just when?
There are a few more. I need to bridge a few more things before I think I can get to the part where I can, you know,
you have a book. Few more Craigslist checks.
Yeah, I do. I have a few more things I need to milk out of that. But no, that's honestly how things kind of got started. And then from there, I got pulled in several directions. I got asked to open up a restaurant in Harlem. I did that. And I came back around and I ended up dabbling in television for another quick stint. And that's the beautiful thing about television. Once you work on the show and the show dismembers, people start calling you from all different shows that they're now working on. I got a call to work on the Harry Connick Jr. show and to do help with their set decoration. Then I got called to come to Nashville to work on the Kelly Pickler show, which was, you know, there in Nashville, and they put me on their show. And so things just kept stacking and building. And so 2018, I get a call from a TLC network. And they're like, hey, my manager called me and she was like, you know, TLC wants to talk to you. And I'm like, great. So I take this meeting over the phone with them. And they're like, oh, you know, we've seen all of your videos on Steve Harvey. Remember, I didn't want to work for him. But he's like, we've seen all these wonderful videos on Steve Harvey and, you know, all over the internet and the Real Housewives of Atlanta. Oh, yeah, Steve Harvey got me that job, too. As I got to design Sheree Whitfield's basement on the Real Housewives. So they said, we saw these things and we want to know, you know, what your schedule is like, because we're interested in, you know, having you on our show. And so I get off the phone with my manager. I'm like, okay, so when is the audition? And she's like, no, you got it.
Yeah, so like, you're at a different level now.
Right. I'm like, exactly. I'm so used to like auditioning. I'm like, okay, great. They're interested. Now when's the audition? But I say that to say, I didn't even audition for Changing Spaces. My audition was were my Steve Harvey videos. And so it was such a lesson. And, you know, being patient and, you know, and again, in television, there aren't that many brown people.
Yeah.
And a lot of times we don't even realize the blessing in those brown people because those brown people can take you places that others can't take you as quickly. Yeah. So, and that's why I have to say Steve Harvey and his business manager, Rashawn McDonald, the two of them single-handedly, you know, helped me on that show. And Alex Duda, you know, I have to give her credit too because she gave me my start. Mm. But that trio, you know, really helped boost my career.
Yeah, that propelled you to that level to get you know, someone spoke to the dream you wanted. So my second question.
Yes.
It's just going to be, you know, with all of this.
Yeah.
Especially just being, I think, a Black man in the interior design industry as well. Like, what does Black history mean to you this year? Like, what does it usually kind of fill you up with?
For me, Black history is something that's extremely important. You know, I am someone who grew up in Detroit, Michigan, you know, an inner city. Mm-hmm. And I went to Morehouse College. And so, fortunately, I've been in arenas where, you know, I've been around people who look like me. And I know not everybody has that opportunity to be in a room full of people who look like them.
Yeah.
And so for me, Black history is something that's extremely important, especially in the design industry, because oftentimes we feel a little overlooked.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say underrepresented.
Yeah.
And so it makes me feel good to be a Black man in the interior design industry because I feel like the strides that I'm able to make now are going to be able to open up doors for so many people. That's really what Black history means to me. You know, there was someone who paved the way for me to be able to go into a building, you know, that wasn't integrated before. So it's always somebody paying, you know, paving the way for you. And that's what Black history really is to me. So this month I've specifically, you know, I always think about, you know, give backs and what I
can
in order to make a way for others. And it's also something else that I always try to say with about Black interior designers and Black people in the industry. One of the things that I pride myself on, and I will say, let me give the disclaimer that I always recognize that I am a Black man. Mm-hmm. But when I go to work, I'm a designer.
Yes.
And I don't want to be credited because I'm a Black designer. Mm-hmm. I don't ever want you to give me something because of my skin tone. Mm-hmm. Don't give it to me because you think, you know, or you, I don't want to be a quota. I don't want to be remembered. I always want to be remembered as a great designer. That's what I want to remember that first.
Yes.
And so that's always my biggest thing. You know, when I walk to design conferences and meetings, I'm very selective in the things that I decide to discuss.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Just because it can get kind of tricky. You know, I've seen several situations where, you know, Black people are chosen in several industries, you know, just because of the color of our skin. But I want you to judge me off the merit of my work. And so that's always my goal.
Well said. And then my last question is, what is trending for you in the interior design industry this year? Like, what are you attracted towards?
Well, anytime people ask me about trends, I'm not really a big trend person, to be honest, when it comes to interior design. I have to speak my design truth. And for me, I love a design aesthetic that I call primitive modern. Okay. I feel like there is so much pressure in the design industry to make everybody choose something. Well, for me, unfortunately, some days I like a really clean, modern aesthetic. But then other days I wake up and I'm like, no, I don't want everything to be clean and new and sterile. I want something from the vintage store that's, you know, a little dirty, something that has some patina. And so for me, I don't like being pigeonholed. And so that's why I use that term, you know, primitive modern. So for me, I can speak on what I look for. And mm-hmm. those are things that have character, things that have patina, things that look like they were curated and, you know, built and constructed in some small little village. I like that type of design. I like neutrals. And so being that I like neutrals and I'm not a big color person, I have to find things that have character. And for me, character includes things that are imperfect. And so for me, my trend is to always look for things or to find the perfect in the imperfect.
I love that. Well, we're going to end it on that note. I mean, Mikel, you like filled me up for the day. I'm like, oh my God, good. That's such an amazing story.
Well, good. Well, listen, come back in a year and hopefully I have some more for you.
Oh yeah. And you know, I'm ready for the books. So we can talk about all that as well. All right. Thank you so much. And I'll let you know when this all goes live. Okay.
Okay. Sounds good. Have a good afternoon.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Well, I hope you really enjoyed that episode. And as I just want to remind people, it's just really good to give ourselves some Monday motivation. Remind ourselves that if we want to do this, we can absolutely find a way to get there. It's just important to have drive and have a vision of where you want to be. And I'll tell you, I feel like when I was listening to that interview recently again with Mikel, I felt like there was a roller coaster of emotions and ups and downs. But he got to where he wanted to be. And again, I think that cannot be ignored about the level of drive and passion that Mikel has for interior design and how he got to where he is. So again, I want to thank everyone who's been listening, subscribing. I'm excited for these new interviews that we're working on right now. Again, we'll be focusing on home renovations. We'll be talking to tastemakers about the ins and outs and how are they actually getting it done this year. So make sure that you listen and share with your friends and family. And I hope you stay safe and have some fun. Bye-bye.